Welcome back, everyone, to the Dear Taiwan podcast, and my name is Teacher Joseph. On this episode today, we are joined yet again by my friend in Taichung, Teacher Matt, who has also been living in Taiwan almost as long as I have been. And today we're going to talk about five more things we noticed about Taiwan when we first moved here all those years ago. So, without further ado, let's welcome one more time Teacher Matt. Matt, we're happy to have you back on the show. How's life in Taichung?
I'm good. Busy. You know, I'm going back to work now. I had a long vacation in the summer. And I just moved to a new apartment. So busy, buying lots of stuff, cleaning lots of stuff.
That's definitely exciting.
Papers and stuff at work. So
I remember you telling me that you live above a pizza restaurant.
Yeah, I literally live above a pizza restaurant. Well, not directly above. They're on the first floor and I'm on the fourth. But when I walk up the stairs, when I come back home, I can smell them cooking.
All right, so we're going to jump right into it. We are talking today about five more things that we noticed when we first moved to Taiwan in 2012 for me, 2013 for you. Yeah. And the first thing on our list today is the fact that there is basically no trash cans anywhere for public use in Taiwan, whichever city you're in. Now, this was definitely a big shock for me because I assume it's the same where you're from in New York City. Like growing up, if you're out somewhere downtown, whether you're getting a slice of pizza to go or you need to like throw away some receipts in your pocket, you take like 10 steps and there's a public trash can, you can just pitch it. But that's certainly not the case in Taiwan.
Yeah, I think it actually worked out for the best. If anyone has been to New York City after like, you know, a windy day, you know that those garbage cans don't stay full of garbage. They just kind of release it everywhere and there's garbage all over the streets everywhere.
So it spills out because people like they're excessively throwing things away?
Or they just don't pick it up in time and the wind, you know, picks it up and moves it somewhere else. Or okay, like some drunk idiot kicks over the can and there's garbage spills out, you know, or something like that.
There's probably a lot more drunk idiots in New York City than Taipei, to be honest. Now, to be fair to Taipei, there are now some public trash cans in some parts of the city, but they're definitely still not the norm. And they're kind of only on like the main businessy boulevards. Yeah. How about Taichung?
No. Just I haven't totally seen a single one. Not a single public garbage can. Yeah, I mean, whenever I do find like a restaurant that has their garbage outside, because, you know, they're throwing away stuff as they're cooking it or yeah, something like that, you know, the scraps, I would like empty my pockets of, you know, whatever's in them.
Yep. Yeah. Back especially before I was working like my full-time job in one location, I was just always in and out of convenience stores. And mm-hmm, with exceptions, most convenience stores will have a trash can that like you can throw things away in if you're buying something else. So it's just like a constant rotation of me buying things at convenience stores, which sure it might add up, but it's like 20 NT for a bottle of green tea or like 70 cents US. So whatever.
Yeah. A lot of times I don't even buy anything. I just walk in, throw my stuff out and then walk out.
Like make like awkward eye contact with the clerk going like, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Like, yeah, you know what I'm doing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I actually did some research back in the day, if you want to call it research. And there's kind of a reason why. Way back before Taiwan had its amazing garbage truck system where they like have trucks with loud music going around picking right up garbage three times a day some places, three times a day other places, Taiwan kind of did have a system like New York City where people just brought their trash to centralized giant dumpsters. And the kind of the rhythm of when it was picked up versus when like a lot of people would go to the place to dump it out didn't really match, and it would build up, it would become a huge mess, you'd get rats and cockroaches, you'd get stinky areas in certain neighborhoods, and it was just like, I mean, kind of a nightmare for like municipal planners. And then they implemented the garbage truck scheme sometime in the 90s. And just
I feel like
never
Taiwan is rapidly modernized, you know?
I was watching
the John Oliver special about Taiwan.
Ooh, yeah.
Earlier this week or whenever it came out. And like, I didn't realize that Chiang Kai-shek died in like, what, 79, and they ended martial law in like 85, and I was like, oh, yep. Fuck, that's super recent to
the first
not be killing people everywhere.
The actual first Democratic election to vote for the president was 96.
Holy shit.
Yep. And it's like a lot of, especially my coworkers who might be a little bit more kind of jaded about Taiwan, they'll make comments about how Taiwanese are kind of slow to, you know, change their minds and behaviors. And I mean, honestly, it's nothing could be further from the truth. Like, you think of Taiwan now and how people are, like, granted, there's still some people stuck in their old ways, but you compare Taiwan to like the 1980s versus like any Western country, to the 1980s, and things are so different in Taiwan.
Yeah,
whereas, like, I mean, I wasn't really alive in the 1980s, but it doesn't look very different in the U.S. I mean,
When did they make Taipei 101?
04, I think they started, and it may have been finished in 07.
What? Around,
yeah. I mean, it looks pretty, like, freaking new still, right?
Yeah, like, I'm baffled, man. In New York City, all the buildings are like, you know, a century and a half old. Like,
yep. And like, what, the Empire State Building was like the highest building in the world for like 40 years straight, something like that.
Not even that tall.
I think. Yeah, I mean, like, nowadays it's not, but like back then it was just, it was monstrous. Kirby's stopping by.
Yeah, I hear him.
Yeah. There was one more thing that ended garbage cans in Taiwan that I just thought of. I don't know what year this was, but in whenever Japan hosted the Olympics, not this past time, but like the time before, there was actually a bombing, a very small one, where somebody put a bomb in a public trash can. And that was the catalyst for Tokyo to get rid of almost all their public trash cans. Like, not that it ever really was likely to happen again, but it was such this, you know, shock to everybody there that they just totally got rid of them. And with Taiwan and Japan being so, like, such close allies and sharing a lot of exchanges, Taipei also got rid of their trash cans about the same time. And I remember when that Universiade international college sports event came to Taipei. I forget what year that was, like maybe 2018, maybe 2017. All the trash cans in the MRT were changed, in which the trash bags were taped to the front of them, and you could see inside the full thing just for extra security.
Like clear plastic or something?
Like a giant kind of thicker plastic trash bag, but it's translucent or transparent. So like, I mean, granted, it, like, let's say some heavy wind blew through the MRT, it totally could just kind of spill out. But like, that was their initial thought. We're worried that somebody could do something and put something dangerous in the trash cans. All right. Second thing that I noticed when I first moved to Taiwan, more so than anywhere in the West, is just the sheer fact that there is food everywhere. And what I mean by this is that there's so much more of a restaurant culture, and I kind of almost refer to them as eateries, not really restaurants, because in these Taiwanese restaurants, there's not much of a service culture. But Taiwanese, by and large, don't cook at home that much unless it's a whole family. So anywhere you're walking, whether it's big city Taipei, Taichung, small town, in really any county, there's just a bunch of small restaurants that all generally specialize in just a few things. So like, if you're going to go out to them with your friends, you're all going to kind of get the same variation of the same food. And even beyond this, there's vendors everywhere, like people who are just selling street food, even far simpler than like an American food truck concept, just with a little stand selling food in the street, whether that's tofu, some red bean cakes, some braised meat noodle dishes, or even just
meat sweet potato balls.
Yeah. What else have you seen, Matt?
Takoyaki.
Takoyaki, yeah.
Was it Ooh, Yan Sui Chi.
Yep.
The saltwater chicken.
Yeah. It's pretty healthy.
Really?
I mean, it looks healthy.
My girlfriend yelled at me. She says too salty.
Sure. I mean, I talked about this the past Tainan episode, how food in Taiwan just across the board is just often overly sweet. So, I mean, yeah. Who knows if it actually is too salty by definition. I remember my first year in Zhongli Hess, there were a few go-to places we'd go to have dinner between classes. Have a half an hour to get dinner between two classes. And there is a really good place. I called it a buffet, but it's not really a buffet. And these places are everywhere across the country. They're called in Chinese zijuzan, or self-serve restaurant, or self-serve dishes, where you just like get a paper box full of rice, point to some dishes, and the clerk or whatever will take some tongs and like pile three or four or five kinds of random things into your box. And you pay whether you're eating inside or getting it to go, and it's like AD&T maybe.
Yeah.
Depending
There's on a lot of places that you can serve yourself, actually. So if you just want like a ton of something, then like you can just fill your box with that and they'll charge you like even lower a price. Yeah, I remember one time like I was experimenting, because when I worked in Neili Hess, I would get my lunch at a jitsu fan place.
Mm-hmm.
And like if I got like say four different vegetables and that was my lunch, right? Yeah. I would get it in a box and I would pay maybe, I don't know, 75 NT or something like that, depending on what vegetables I bought. But then if I only got two vegetables, same box, same size, same vegetables, you know, the expensive broccoli or whatever it is and the cheap whatever else.
Yeah.
It would be like 40 NT, you know? And I tried it again in Taichung because there's a like a vegetarian style self-serve, I guess, buffet, whatever you call it, near my job now. And like if the less types of things you get, the cheaper it will be. So like if you get a lot of something, it'll be cheaper than getting like half and half with something else.
Is the place you're referring to in Neili kind of like, if you're walking away from Neili Hess where it used to be, is it like kind of towards Carrefour? Like if you're going to the in that direction?
It is in that direction, but it's not near that main road, near the train.
Yeah, it's not near the main road.
It's very, it's like one block away from Neili Hess.
Yeah.
And then you turn right and walk one more block and it's right there.
Basically a giant room in a garage building, right?
Pretty much, but many are like that.
I know the one. I took my parents there when they visited in 2014. And yeah, that's the same concept, but you do serve yourself with like, you take some tongs and take a tray and go down the line. And what I've found with a lot of these places is that the cashier just counts the meat. They don't even look at the vegetables at all. Like when I go to the one by me, like I'll get, you know, whatever, like sweet and sour chicken or some kind of like sliced pork with the pomelo soy sauce. And then like I'll only pay, like the price will be determined by how much meat I took. They don't even care about the eggplant or like the green vegetables, the tofu or whatever. But the place in Neili that I have a fond memory of, because this was, of course, when we were really beginning to absorb a lot of Chinese, like living in Taiwan for 2 years, you're kind of getting your head around the basic phrases and stuff, and you're learning to have very basic conversations. The lady who worked there would throw on three interjections after she would say the price. Like, you know, how, like that's in my list later on. Taiwanese have these like a whole range of interjections that they just throw into speech, right? So So it's all a la a or but this lady, like, you'd rock up there with your tray, and if it's 70 NT, she would go 70 NT. And I was like, that must have been a lot of effort for you to just go at the end of that. Like, why? But it became like an inside joke later on with me and my wife. Like, just and you can write it in Chinese, all three interjections.
Oh, characters. Really?
Yeah, there's a way to do it. Fond memories of Neili.
Yeah, I like that place.
Yeah, they had a big variety.
Yeah, yeah. There used to be a place like that near my work, but they closed down, sadly.
There's a few of them on the way home from where I work. If I go through Nanshijiao, which is really crowded to drive, depending on when you go, but like they're still pretty good. And we should also add, they're really popular. Like if you go to one of these places at 5 p.m., you're going to have like families with kids who just got off school there. You're going to have old grandmas getting off work at the traditional markets, eating dinner at, you know, 5 because that's their dinner time. And they'll just be bringing out massive plates of dishes and plopping them right down in the middle, kind of long metal table, I guess you could say. Like, it's economies of scale. It's so cheap because it's such a high quantity of food being, you know, pumped out from this one small restaurant with a lot of people eating.
Mm-hmm. Another thing about, like, food being everywhere, it's not even, like, I know, like, in Taiwan, you get a lot of attention for the night markets, but, like, I haven't been to a night market in, you know, a long time, like a couple of years. Yeah, they built a new one near my old house. But that was, you know, 2 years ago, maybe 2.5, right. Something like that. So I went there when it first opened and I was like, this is too crowded. I don't want to be here. So that's the last time I went to a night market. But there's just food everywhere. Not just like, you know, crowded stalls in a specific place like a night market, but just like on a normal street, like some auntie will open up, you know, a squid grilling, you know, stall. And then at nighttime, she'll like wheel it away somewhere and hide it away. And then the next night, she'll bring it back out, you know, like a lot of food everywhere.
I totally agree. So, like you don't even need to go to the night markets to get comparable night market food and, you know, that same style. Like it's not just kind of segregated that way. Like, you know, vendors are here. It's just across the entire city. Like if you're walking out of my apartment, and you're going through the dense, crowded alleys of plenty of apartment buildings towards the bus stop on the other road, you're going to pass by, like, two breakfast shops that do, like, old-fashioned danbing. They just feel like they're in the middle of nowhere because there's just nothing around except for, like, scooter parking and apartments. But they're still there.
Apartments have hungry people, you know, so
right. I think they can make money. Yeah, definitely. I remember also, like, you know, back when I was much more active, went for like a long bike ride, kind of like out of the city towards like towards Pingxi, but not all the way there. But like at this random intersection of these two mountain roads, which were full roads for the record, they weren't like just like a farm road. Yeah. There was one convenience store, and a guy selling a whole wide variety of like braised tofu, and this is like a Tuesday night at 8 p.m. and you're like, what the hell are you doing? Like, I'm just the random guy who took a bike ride here. There's nobody around. You're still making food. It's almost like Taiwanese think of making food as like their constitutional right, the same way Americans do with guns. Like, how dare you question my right to set up a stand in front of my house and sell denbing?
But braised tofu, he's just got a pot of tofu in front of his house.
I just ordered a, you know, zonghe, like mixed, and it had like four different kinds of tofu, like dogan and like the one that's more nutty and the one that's like, it's kind of looks like fake meat, but it's still totally tofu. And, you know, with like soy sauce and scallions and chilies and some sesame paste, or maybe it was sesame, I don't know. And it was good.
Yeah, sounds good.
And it was very, very dark out.
My dinner was very small.
Yeah.
I'm still hungry.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Matt, since your dinner was very small, you should go out and get some tofu after this.
Yeah, maybe there's a barbecue restaurant across the street. So like, and they're only open at night. Cause they sell like the skewers and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And they're literally right across the street. So, like, I can smell them cooking it at night, and it, like, wafts into my bedroom window. And it just it makes me hungry, man.
Nice. Nice, nice, nice.
Yeah, I think I'm going to visit them later.
But, yeah, so to sum it up, Taiwan has this massive food culture and eating out culture. People don't often cook at home unless it's for a huge family, or for their whole family, I should say. And You can find vendors on most corners, not just the night market. You can find them in plenty of random spots in the city and even in small towns. And whether it's a dumpling restaurant or a self-serve buffet restaurant, or even just a lady selling zongzi from her motorcycle perched on one corner. Oh, if you remember that. There was like my first year apartment, there was a lady who would randomly just begin shouting, "Batan! Batan!" like up to the apartments for everyone to hear, which is apparently Taiwanese for zongzi. And then everybody would just hear it, hop in the elevator, go down, and just have like 30 NT ready to buy zongzi off this random lady. I don't know how old-fashioned that is.
She rides her bicycle.
Nice. I was saying, I don't know how old-fashioned that is, but you just said that there's a lady who rides her bicycle.
Yeah, she rides a bicycle and it has like a little metal cooler attached to the back. And then like you could order like noodles from her.
That is awesome.
And like she just puts some like broth on the noodles, throws in some like random stuff, you know, like scallions and stuff and some other kind of stuff, whatever you order. And then, yeah, you can have it for like breakfast or whatever.
We don't get a lot of that in Taipei, like bicycle or motorcycle vendors as much.
Sorry, there's a lot of like bicycle people selling like duo duo or like ice cream or something, you know?
That is so charming, actually. It's kind of like really old world almost. Not old world, like Guzauda, right?
Yeah.
All right, the next one I have on my list, number 8, old is I've written down that red stuff on the ground, betel nut spit. Now, you probably had the same experience as me, unless you actually knew what betel nut was prior to moving to Taiwan. And it's called binlang in Chinese. But you just would see random like drops and splashes of red on the sidewalk. And my first instinct was, oh, that must be blood. Maybe there was a fight here. No, totally not. What it is mostly older men chewing this nut for like a stimulating effect, kind of like a comparable to chewing tobacco, and spinning it out in the street, and it turns your saliva red. And if you're wearing sandals and you accidentally kick a whole chewed up nut, it's disgusting.
Ew.
And yeah, you'll see taxi drivers, blue collar workers chewing this. People down south and in the mountains often will chew this, and it's supposed to give you a buzz. I've never tried it. It looks disgusting to me. It makes your mouth all like orangey, bloody looking. And
oh, dude, the first time I saw someone chewing betel nut, I like freaked out. Like, I think I was on a hike with you or Andrew, and like the guy was chewing it, and he was like selling some fruit or something like on the trail, and like he was, you know, calling out like his product, you know, and like talking and stuff. And his mouth was just full of like what looked like blood.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, this fucking guy has like the most aggressive cancer ever. He's like bleeding in his mouth, this poor fucking dude.
Yep.
And then I see him spit into a cup, and I'm like, oh, it's just fucking beet or not. Like, ew, what the fuck?
And what
I didn't know it turned your mouth red. Like,
yeah, it's a green nut. It's a light green nut wrapped in a like a medium green leaf. Like, how it turns red is beyond me, to be honest. I've never tried it. Did you try it before?
Yeah, I've tried it, like, you know, while drinking or something. Like, someone has it, and they offer me a piece, so I'll try it. But I never really chewed it for long enough for it to go red.
Okay. Does it just get boring?
It tastes kind of weird.
Okay.
I mean, not bad, per se, but I would rather not chew it than chew it, you know?
You mentioned a cup. A lot of times what you'll see in the middle of the road, maybe less so nowadays because the government has for the past 10 years been trying to like dissuade people from chewing it as much. You'll see a like a very small like fluoride cup or like 6 ounce plastic cup full of all the already been chewed red nuts just in a pile in the middle of the road. Because taxi drivers, again, less so now, but back in the day more so, would, like, at a red light, just, like, crack open the door, dump it out, and then drive on.
Oh, dude, I hate when people do that. I still see that today, even in Taichung. Like, in like maybe not the city center, but like especially like where I work in Dali, which is like, you know, kind of more to the side.
Yeah, it's, you like know, the kind of a suburban area to the south of Taichung, right?
Yeah, like a smaller district off to the side, you know.
Yeah.
No big stores, no famous things there, just whatever. And like, you know, you see some, you know, uncle driving a scooter and he's got like fucking five kids on the back, and then he's got a cup full to the brim of fucking Beetle Nut juice and old Beetle Nut that's chewed up already. And then he has it in a cup, and then he just throws and empties the cup and then puts the cup back so he can fill it up again. And I'm like, what the fuck is the point of having the cup? Like,
just, right.
If you're going to litter, just fucking litter. Like, jeez.
It's disgusting. I think I have, so before this eventually gets brought up, I think I have in my list later on the Beetle Nut Girls. I'll just mention it now and we'll save it for later. But a lot of times you can buy this nut from scantily clad, attractive young women selling it in like special floor-to-ceiling glass window boxes by the side of the road. Definitely less so now in the north. I don't see it much anywhere at all, but it probably still happens in other parts of the country.
I don't really see it in Taichung either.
The only place I really would see it was when I was, again, back in Zhongli in like 2012, 2013, I would see like several of these Beetle Nut girls, but I see none at all anywhere, Taipei, New Taipei. And even if I go back to Taoyuan, I see very few. There's some, you know, ethical issues there and some bad things that can happen, but it's definitely going to turn your head as you're driving. See like a girl basically in a bikini making Beetle Nut and selling it to whomever, I don't know.
Now, whenever I pass the shops, like the Beetle Nut shops, because they still have Beetle Nut shops out here, even if they don't have the Beetle Nut beauties.
Right.
It's just like, you know, some middle-aged woman smoking a cigarette and like super fast wrapping the nuts, you know?
Yep. Yeah, there's in my area, because like there's a pretty huge road just kind of 5 minutes walk away from me. Anyway, it's a busy road and there's a bunch of like car repair shops. So there's a bunch of Beetle Nut shops there, because it kind of goes hand in hand with like blue collar work. All like kind of dimly lit shops with middle-aged women or even men just kind of making it and selling it, just like nothing flashy. Mm-hmm. The last thing that I'll say about Beetle Nut is that, do you remember in Zhongli how there's always just a massive crowd of taxi drivers crowding the train station exit trying to get a fare or to get a customer?
Yeah.
Before Zhongli had U-Bike, I bought a bicycle and I was definitely in the habit of biking certain places. And, you know, growing up in small town America, you just lock your bike to a tree. If you lock your bike somewhere and it's not blocking anything, you have, in my perspective, securely stowed your bike. So I learned, I was very incorrect later on. I thought people wouldn't really kind of trifle with my bike lock, but that's a different story. So I had locked my bike to like a pole or like a railing by Zhongli Station. I wasn't away for too long. I maybe was in Taoyuan for like a few hours and just took the train two stops back, and I'm coming out. And one of these motherfuckers had spit up all of his Beetle Nut spit on my bike seat. My bike seat, this was a new bike. I mean, never mind that doesn't really matter so much, but just made me a little more angry. Like, okay, my bike seat is now covered in red spit and like, it kind of looks like a red woody pulp, right? And I'm going to have to, you know, use a jacket or something to brush it off and then ride my bike away with like some old man's spit, crusted spit on my butt in a way. It was disgusting.
I would have walked it.
I think I may have actually, because it wasn't super far. I'm kind of happy that it's not as popular as it was. And there's a whole other layer of this to the fact that growing the beetle palm is actually really harmful for soil.
Yeah, it just sucks and sucks and sucks. It doesn't add anything back.
So the government has had some initiatives to get farmers in the central part of the country to switch away from farming.
Oh, yeah, start growing cocoa, start growing coffee. That's where Taiwan's emerging coffee market came from.
Yeah, and we've been to that coffee farm. We'll have to, you know, once we eventually get a chance to do a Huandao again, go there again. Like, they converted their former betel nut farm to a coffee farm. Mm-hmm. And I think with less demand, it's just going to continue this cycle where this, like, betel nut farms get replaced by other crops.
Yeah. You can still see them, though. Like, when you're driving in the mountains, you'll see, like, the betel nut farms.
Yeah, definitely. They stick out because it is a very, very tall and very, very thin palm tree with just a bunch of leaves or palm leaves.
Bronze.
Crowded at the top and some, like, brambly and jagged thin branches just below that. And that's where the nut is actually grown and harvested from.
Oh, dude, have you ever eaten betel nut flowers?
I have, and they're actually pretty good.
Yeah, they are. I got it twice. I liked it so much, I went back.
It's kind of like a thinner bamboo. It's like bamboo, but it looks a bit almost like noodles in a way.
Yeah, it's thin and long, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, the plant itself isn't all bad, but, like, the nut has the drug effect to it.
Yeah, and it causes cancer.
Yeah, yeah, and you'll see, like, older men with, like, randomly misshapen jaws or massive scars in their cheek because they got cancer from chewing all the time. Taiwan has a pretty high rate, or used to have a high rate of mouth cancer in the country, mostly because of betel nut. You want to go to the next one?
Yeah.
So the next one's pretty quick because this was a thing that I noticed when I moved here in 2012, and it is by no means unique anymore. Face masks. We're living in a COVID era. Face masks are a thing across the whole world now. But Matt, when you moved here in 2013, were, like, medical face masks kind of like a stranger or newer thing to you?
Well, I worked in the medical field. In hospitals and stuff. So if you had an infectious patient, then you would, mask up. Or sometimes if they were, they had a weakened immune system, they'd be in an isolation room. So you had to, they had, like, reverse vents and stuff. Instead of blowing air into the room, it would suck air out and, like, spit it off the roof or something. And when you went into those rooms, you had to, like, put on full gowns and masks and face shields and, like, double gloves and tuck this thing into that glove and tuck that thing behind your back and tie it up and all kinds of stuff. Just to go into the patient's room and check their vitals and then leave again. It was a whole process. So I was more familiar with, that kind of stuff, face masks and whatnot. And I wasn't really that surprised when I came out here. I knew that the Asian countries, Japan and Korea and China, they kind of were more used to the face mask than America.
Yeah, definitely, because there was the SARS outbreak in 2004.
Yeah, they had it worse than, the West did. So I think they got more used to it earlier than us.
Yeah. But, it didn't really kind of, like, surprise you to see just, like, regular people going about their day in the city downtown wearing a mask?
Well, I mean, I asked one of my old coworkers, why are you wearing a mask? Because she was just wearing it, like, during the day. And I think she, like, just got to work or something. And she was like, I want to block the sun from making my face dark, getting a tan.
And that's, like, another thing that going off what you just said, like, it's not as if people would choose to wear face masks. Again, this is pre-COVID. Would choose to wear face masks because they're sick. Like, some of the reasons I was told why people wear masks was that they didn't want to wear makeup that day, or they're covering up a pimple, or, like, their mask has a cool design, or, like, their favorite cartoon character and is, like, kind of unique. And, like, obviously people understand how they work, and, like, people will wear a mask if they have a cold or a flu, or if their classmates have colds and flus, they might don one just to for extra protection. But they had a lot of reasons. Also, air pollution, too. Depending on the city, the day, and the reporting, people would wear a mask if there was like a massive.
That's actually why I started wearing my mask.
Yeah.
Like on the drive to work, like say you get caught behind a bus or something, the bus is going to be blowing that smelly air in your face. Like I'd rather have a mask to try to, you know, divert some of it around me, you know, not directly into my nose.
I agree. Yeah. And like I did a, this is off just the top of my head. I did some research back in the day and I forget the exact number, but like wearing a regular medical face mask versus not, like it cuts out like 40 to 60% of the actual pollution getting into your nose and mouth.
Yeah, so, yeah,
like that's obviously better than cutting out zero. It's just a quick way to half solve that problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else to say about face masks? Like thinking back to when you first got here.
Back to when we first got here.
Yeah, like I mean, seeing them being worn by everyday people in the street, you know, just like. Not them not thinking much of it.
I never really second guessed it. I just kind of figured they had a cold or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember telling my students that like in the US, and I'll say it again, pre-COVID, you would only really see people wearing face masks if they were really, really terminally ill. And then you would go, oh my goodness, are you okay? Yeah. And like my students would laugh like, oh, that's so silly.
It's true though. Yeah.
Yeah.
You kind of look at somebody like if they had a face mask, like, oh shit, they're immunocompromised. They got some like stage four cancer.
So the last thing we'll talk about today, and I don't know if you noticed this the same way I did. But one of the first things I noticed in Taiwan when I moved here, obviously was the money. Of course, the money is different. Taiwan's its own country. They have their own money, their own currency, their own denominations. But
make China mad.
I don't care about that. But I noticed right away that coins in Taiwan are not just to be thrown away and donated. Like the smallest common coin in the U.S. is, I mean, the quarter, I guess we could argue, is the smallest common coin because across most of the country, dollar coins are not very common. And the quarters holds little to no value. You can't buy much at all for a quarter nowadays, or even a bunch of quarters, except for like a pack of gum. And even then, I don't know.
No, gum's 30 cents now.
Ooh, 30 cents. Okay, there we go. We get a quarter. Oh, shit. Nickel. But coins in Taiwan nowadays, you have the 1 NT coin, obviously is the smallest coin, 5 NT, 10 NT, and 50 NT. And you can buy real, tangible things for 50 NT. 50 NT dollars is about $1.70 US.
So you can that's buy one tangible things for 10 NT.
Yeah, yeah. Some places really can. You can. The fact that you can
like not just candy and snacks. You can buy like tea eggs and stuff.
Yeah, you can buy vegetables at a market sometimes for 10, 20 NT. Yeah. You can buy stationery maybe. And my point in bringing this up was that like, hold on to your coins in your pocket because you're actually going to use them. You're not just going to immediately default reach for a note because the smallest note is the 100 NT bill. And that's worth about $3.30 US.
A bit more nowadays, but yeah.
Yeah. Cause the Taiwan dollar is up, which especially with prices and the cost of living being lower than the U.S., like, that's a bunch of money. You can buy dinner for 100 NT.
I frequently do, yeah.
Yeah, as do I. I just thought it was nifty almost how, like, almost like the Old West, you got one coin, you go ping down on the counter, and you buy a real thing. Yeah. As opposed to, like, just having to use a dollar bill and thinking that your coins are just going to be, you know, thrown away or lost. Say what?
I was pretending to be in the Old West. I was like, I want 20 apples. Here's a penny.
Yeah. But even then, like, bills in Taiwan, the common bills are the 100, the 500, and the 1,000. The 1,000 is about $34 US. Like, I always felt like the $100 bill in the US is way too much to just carry around and buy things with. And even today, like when I convert currency and go back to the US and I get a stack of hundreds, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to use this for anything. Never mind the fact that in the US it's all debit cards and stuff nowadays, and you just swipe your card. But
yeah, I told them, like, when I changed money to go back this summer, I told them, like, don't give me $100 bills because I'm not going to be able to spend that anywhere. Like, most places in New York City, at least, you know, the small bodegas and delis, they're afraid to get robbed. So they're not keeping a lot of money in the cash register.
Exactly.
You come in with $100, they're like, I don't got change for that. And I'm like, neither do I, obviously. That's why I try to use it. Yep.
Yeah. Whereas, like, 1,000 NT dollars isn't burdensome for anybody. You can go to a noodle restaurant, and usually, if you order a dish, let's say it's 80 NT, and you're like, oh, sorry, I only have 1,000. They'll like, oh, no issue. I'll give you change for that. I got 920 NT in my pocket. And it's just like,
yeah,
whatever. The notes, the bills are also different colors and different sizes, which is better than the US, of course. Anybody who's, you know, let's say blind or, you know, vision impaired can easily figure out which note is which. Oh, and there's also no freaking use for like a Coinstar machine. Did you have that in New York City?
Yeah, sometimes like a supermarket, they'll have a machine, but you had to pay to use it. So
Right. So the idea to pay a machine to reorganize your cash is stupid.
Yeah.
And like, sure, you're not going to use 1NT coins very much in Taiwan. And I mean, you know, maybe they're a little bit mafan, but, you know, it's just one coin. The smallest coin, the 1NT coin, is worth about 4 cents. You know? It's not that
small. I rarely have, you know, more than 10 coins on me.
Yeah.
I just spend it as I get it, you know?
Yeah, me too. And another part of that is the fact that Taiwan still is largely a safe cash-based society. Like, it has, I think, the world's highest concentration of ATMs, and the fee to use an ATM of a different bank is 5 NT or 17 cents US, so no one cares. Yeah, in Taiwan, I don't even think about it. I don't know which ATM is the ATM, or rather, I don't know which bank the ATM is in Family Mart. It's not my bank. I don't even think about it. I just go to it. It's the closest ATM.
Yeah, that's true. Like, yeah,
and when I need to, it's 17 cents to take out 3,000 NT at a time. And
I do harder on the higher numbers.
Yeah, but yeah, that's the point of me bringing this up. Noticing that the coins and the bills hold real value, and the denominations they're in is actually quite useful. Especially
it's more comfortable than having a huge amount of money.
Yeah, it definitely is. It doesn't feel cumbersome.
Yeah, like walking around in America, especially in New York City, like, even $50 in my pocket, $20, like, that's enough for someone to rob you, you know? I've been mugged for less, way less than 20 bucks. You know, people, they just do it because they can, you know?
Yeah.
And Taiwan, I think it's safe enough that I've walked around with, you know, thousands of dollars in cash in my pocket, American dollars worth, you know?
Yep. Yeah.
Never feared that someone was going to, you know, try to pull something.
Yeah, I mean, that's also in my list later on. Is Taiwanese just safety, the fact that it's one of the five safest countries in the whole world. I mean, sure, there's still certain qualities to Taiwan that aren't as safe, whether it's, you know, the roads or natural disasters or things like that. But, you know, statistically, you are not going to be mugged in Taiwan. You are not going to be bothered. Matt, thanks so much for joining for this second episode of Five Things We Noticed When We Moved to Taiwan. I mean, I know these maybe weren't some of the most interesting things, but these were the things that I noticed right away.
Yeah, it's still fun to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. And fun to reminisce on some of those early times in Zhongli again. Maybe the next episode, whenever that'll be, maybe we'll try to blow through 10 things in one episode, not just leave it at 5. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yeah, I think we chat too much for that. So we go definitely to tangents.
It's kind of, you know, it's a lingering effect of social isolation in the very, very comparatively brief COVID spell Taiwan had. I wonder how socially awkward most Americans got before things opened up again.
Well, I had to quarantine for 3 weeks, so I got pretty awkward, I'm sure.
Yeah, that definitely sucks. But anyway, yeah, thanks for coming on, and I hope you continue to enjoy your new apartment in Taichung.
Yeah, I hope so too.
All right, see you next
cockroaches time. Finally.
No, cockroach is good.
And that's all for today on the Dear Taiwan podcast. Thank you so much for listening. One more time, this has been Teacher Joseph, and my guest has been Teacher Matt. At one point in the podcast, we mentioned a coffee farm, which had been converted previously from a betel nut farm. This coffee farm is called the Guoxing Meilin Cafe Nongchang, and it is in Guoxing Township, Nantou County. It's at number 30 Baiyuan Road, and I encourage any of our listeners to stop by the farm for a tour and some craft coffee, really high quality stuff, if you're in the area. Thanks again for listening, and hope you can tune in next time.